I was trying to start my writing career in earnest because I've always loved to write. My husband is very restless. He's the nomad. I'm the homebody. And every time we would visit Europe, we'd get back and I was happy to be back in Utah or wherever it was because we lived all over the country of the United States as well. And he would say, don't you want to go back to Europe? Don't you want to see those beautiful castles and outdoor cafes and all that? And he kept on me for years. And finally, I said, okay, you win.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. And we'll also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
We all have different expectations for our retirement, and sometimes the husband and the wife may have different expectations. So how do we marry that up? Today's guest, Tricia Pimentel, and her husband had different ideas for what their retired life would look like. Tricia is a writer and she was quite happy living in America. But her husband had different ideas. He wanted a bit of adventure. So how has that all worked out? I'd like to welcome now our guest for today, Tricia Pimentel. Welcome.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Tricia is retired, is a writer, and has permanently retired overseas with her husband. Tricia is the International Living's foreign correspondent for Portugal. And I'm always fascinated to learn why someone decides to relocate to another country when they retire.
My husband and I moved together here 5 years ago from, we were actually at that time living in Utah in ski country. And I was retired. I had retired from a job as an assistant to an attorney and sports agent for, I had been with him for many years. And I was trying to start my writing career in earnest because I've always loved to write. My husband is very restless. He's the nomad. I'm the homebody. And every time we would visit Europe, we'd get back and I was happy to be back in Utah or wherever it was because we lived all over the country of the United States as well. And he would say, don't you want to go back to Europe? Don't you want to see those beautiful castles and outdoor cafes and all that? And he kept on me for years. And finally, I said, okay, you win. And so he's of Portuguese descent. And that's, in essence, basically why we chose Portugal as our place, and for other reasons as well, which I can explain if you would like.
So what in particular drew you to Portugal? Was it the weather? Was it some other reason?
Well, his great-grandparents were born in the Azores, and Madeira. So he's got that history here. We actually thought that we might be on a fast track to citizenship here, dual citizenship with the U.S. by virtue of that. But he's one generation off. He would have had to have had his grandparents born here. So we're going the normal way. We can get into the country and visas and everything later if you wish, and on the track to citizenship. But we chose that, and we also had friends here. We had visited Portugal in 2002 and rented from some people up north near Porto and Braga, and we got in touch with them, and we said, are you still renting? Do you still have a tourism business on your property? And they said yes. So we had kind of a known entity that we were going into. We knew the people, we knew the property, and we just signed a six-month contract with them to stay. And that was the initial part of being here where we lived. We've moved, though, in the 5 years, because we moved here in 2012. We moved five times, and we are in the process right now of moving yet again, but this time to purchase a house. So hopefully that'll keep my husband from moving too much more if we actually put money on something.
Well, you certainly had a good look at the country moving five times. Is it more popular to rent or to buy in Portugal?
Well, it's definitely more common to rent to begin with, and I would heartily advise anyone who's considering expatriating to any country to just dip your toe in the water first, because we, as I said, we knew where we were going up north because we had the friends up there. But we found it wasn't really quite for us. It was a little cold. It was a little rainy. We went to another place for different reasons so we could study. We went down south in the near the University of Coimbra because we wanted to study the Portuguese language there. And then we moved even further south. Portugal is only the size of the state of Indiana, and with only a population of 10 million. So it's a pretty slim little peninsula. And yet there is quite a variety from north to south and east to west, or west to east, I should say, in the Spanish border, in topography with mountains and ocean and valleys and the plains of the Alentejo region, and with temperature. It's all still kind of in the Mediterranean zone, but there are differences. So I would never advise for someone to go online and look at Remax, for instance, or Imo Virtual. Those are two of the big realty companies that people look, you know, when they're looking around for a place to buy or rent, and then just say, ah, this is the one, and try to go through the procedure of purchasing. And the other reason would be because it's a little complicated for non-European Union types, right? Whether from the US or Canada, Australia. The process we're going through with the bank right now is in many steps. And if you're going to get into it, looks like you're getting married basically to your bank and the property. So better to rent, better to taste, and find out what suits you best.
So what is it like over there? You've been there over 5 years. What's special about Portugal, and what places are the expats living?
Well, the people everywhere are wonderful. And I've heard where we're going is a little bit north of where we are now. We're close to Lisbon. We're about 30 minutes northwest of Lisbon at this moment. We're going up northeast from there, actually not too far from the Spanish border, to an area called Fundão, or Castelo Branco, which means White Castle, would be an area that would, if someone were Googling, they'd be able to find and see something about the region. What's one of the major attractions here is because it's further inland and it doesn't have the appeal of all the ocean front, or in the south, the Algarve, where all the vacation areas are. So you can get more for your money. Like any place in any country, it depends on where you are, what is being offered for the same price. So we have found a place with a great deal of property and a small vineyard and a pool and a view on a hillside and everything for a price. We're here where we are in Mafra, which is the actual name of the town we're in, would be twice the price. So we're going there so we can have a little bit more independence. It has a well. It has cherry trees, other fruit orchards, and the vineyard, as I mentioned. There's land around where you can construct buildings, so you can have your own tourism building, like little bed and breakfast type places, if we ever decide to go into that. So a great value for the money and very quiet in the countryside, yet only 20 minutes from a good sized town of Castelo Branco.
So what are the advantages for you living in Portugal? Is it hard to be away from the city life you are leading?
Well, it'll certainly be advantageous, I think. Oh, my cuckoo clock is going to go off. I'm sorry. I'm very traditionalist. I think that it's definitely the case that it will help. I'm wanting to start another novel. And I, as we've mentioned, I do write for international living and they keep me very, very busy. So it's a good place to be where you're not distracted by a busy city. But the other part is I was born and raised in New York City, and I've lived in Miami, Los Angeles, large cities. And quite frankly, I've had my fill of that stepping out into the street, into the bustle every day. So if we have access to a fairly lively town with restaurants and cafes and museums and a church, but that's just great. It can be 10, 20 minutes away. It doesn't have to be where I walk out like I did in Manhattan and, you know, it hits you in the face.
A lot of people move overseas because they're either escaping the heat or the cold. How are you finding the weather over there?
In fact, it's funny, Anne, everybody's saying, oh, but it's so cold there. Well, we lived in Utah where it was in ski country and it was zero degrees Fahrenheit much of the winter time. So it's not a problem for us. We actually like a change of season feel. So yes, it'll be colder, but this particular house, this is another thing for your listeners to just file away in the back of their minds. Many Portuguese houses and apartments for rent and for sale have no heat and no air conditioning. So in many places, say like in the Alentejo, there's a special kind of a house called Monte Alentejo. It's a long, low farmhouse with very small windows and thick walls. It tends to be on the dark side. But the benefit of that is it keeps the cool air in the summer and the cold air out in the winter. So all that to say, where we're moving, one of the wonderful benefits, finally we found a house with heat and air conditioning. And we probably will not use it a great deal because there are also two fireplaces and a lot of open French patio doors everywhere, and we like the free air circulation. But at night, it's nice to have, as you sleep, to have air. So it'll be chillier and hotter in the summer, but not unbearable. So we're looking forward to a new adventure.
Who do you mix with over there in Portugal? Are you mainly sticking with the expats, or do you also mix with the locals? How easy is it to live there?
Yes and yes. It depends on where you are with respect to the expats. There are a great deal more in the Lisbon area and south to the Algarve region. In the north, a little in Porto, you'll find people, expats up there as well. But there is a group that I'm involved with, a member of, called International Women in Portugal. There are about 400 members from about, I think, 60 countries. There's also a group called Americans in Portugal. There's the British something in Portugal. There's a French-Portuguese affiliation. A lot of these groups are centered around Cascais, which is about 20 kilometers, I think, west of Lisbon. It's a beautiful, beautiful little beach town that you can barely hear Portuguese spoken in, frankly. It's only English. And then I meet a lot of Dutch people there and French and from Asia visiting. So anyway, those areas, you'll find it a lot. If you go to the interior, like I mentioned before, the Alentejo, which is kind of the center of the country and inland, you should know some Portuguese. If you're visiting get some basics down, because you'll find, especially as you travel along rural routes, people are not going to speak English. But I'm involved with Americans of Portugal and International Women in Portugal, and they offer almost everything you could possibly dream of. I've taken bridge lessons and Portuguese lessons and French lessons. And as a matter of fact, with Americans in Portugal, it used to be another name, but they changed it. But at any rate, they do an annual Thanksgiving dinner for the Americans, with the turkey and the trimmings and all that. So there's a huge grouping like that to get involved with. And they're on Facebook. So you can connect with these groups before, like if your listeners are planning on an exploratory mission to Portugal, go on Facebook and look up some of these groups and say, I'm coming to visit in January or April, and I'd like to connect with someone who lives near, fill in the blank of the city, and you'll get a response. As a matter of fact, I met with people recently, and I have other people coming into town for solely through these connections who want to kind of pick my brain, and I'm happy to do that with them. So, and as far as the locals go, some of our closest ties, I'm going to be sorry to leave this area of Mafra, because we have found universally wherever we've lived in the country that the locals who appear gruff and keep to themselves, the moment you make a connection, an eye connection, or say bon dia or whatever to them, good day, they will open up like a flower and will help you, speak to you the best you can, try to speak English to you. They are a lovely, lovely people. So expats and locals both.
Have you noticed a big difference in your cost of living expenses in Portugal?
Oh, no question. We found from when we left our last place in outside of Park City, Utah, we instantly started, our expenses were a third to a quarter of what they were when we lived in the United States. And that covers the board from across the board, rent, grocery prices, dining out. I'll give you some specifics in a moment. Those are all much less expensive than living in the United States. And the few separate things that are more expensive here, we feel we've found, are the purchase of an automobile, used. We've bought a couple of different used automobiles, but the price of an automobile and the taxes on it, and the cost of fuel and the cost of electricity, those things are higher than we found in the United States. But when you can go for, I just posted this on International Living Europe page on their Facebook page yesterday. We went to lunch yesterday, and lunch for two with water, wine, was $7.87. The typical cup of coffee here is 65 centimos, or about 80 cents. A glass of wine, if you're in a small local neighborhood cafe, is like 90 centimos, like $1.10. In a really big restaurant, it might be $2.50, so say $3. The same glass of wine would be $10 or $12 in Los Angeles. And food, we have found, for instance, normally a really lovely lunch at a medium price restaurant, lunch for two with the three course, because it often comes like you get the prata de dia, the plate of the offer of the day. It comes with soup, a main course of like chicken or beef or fish, and dessert with coffee and usually either a glass of wine or beer or water, and that will run about €9 per person. It's about $20 for two for all that. That's a lunch. And for a dinner, it might be about, depending on where you go, 35, including everything, because tipping is not really expected if you don't ever leave like 10 or 15 or 20%, like as you do in the States. I'm not sure what they do in Australia. But here, for instance, if we have really nice service, and our check was 20 euro. You leave a euro. If you really like them and you want them to remember you when you come back, you leave 2 euros. And that's like about $2.75. I'm not good with the math.
Was it a smooth process for you to move to Portugal? What was the process of obtaining visas, and what does it take to remain there?
It was an extremely smooth process for us. What's required is to go to an embassy wherever you are, in whichever country you're in. For us in the States, I'll just give you our example. Our closest embassy was in San Francisco, California. So we went there and we applied for our visa, and we had it within, oh gosh, I think it was just a couple of weeks or something. We had to have a valid passport, of course. And that visa entitled us to stay in the country, to come to Portugal and stay for up to 6 months. However, within 30 days of arrival, you need to go to what they call SEF. It stands for Serviço Estrangeiros Fronteiros. And that's a fancy word for their immigration department. And apply for a residence here. And it's granted with you show that you can support yourself, that you have an income, that you are, you know, you have health insurance, you demonstrate these things. And the process is you get a visa for 1 year at first. And then after that year, it's renewable for 2 years. And after that, it's renewable for 2 years again. And after that, it becomes renewable for 5 years at a time. We are at the 5 year mark. In 1 year, we will be, because you have to wait 6 years to apply for citizenship and what they call nacionalidad. So that's the process. It was, and we, you make your appointment. It does take a long time. It's months out to get your appointment with SEF. So you come here with your visa, move in wherever you're renting, and head to the nearest office. And you go online, and it's quite clear. It's right in English. You can switch from Portuguese to English. You pick your date online, and they'll send you a confirmation. It's all very official and efficient. So that's the process, and it's not expensive. I mean, one of the reasons, because we were thinking about moving originally to France, was it was very complicated, too many pages to figure out, thousands of euros to become a resident. And in Portugal, it was a few hundred. And they made it very, very easy, painless, and pleasant. So,
are you able to earn an income? How does that work for foreigners?
Yes, I'm able to earn income here. And we pay taxes both in the United States and here. The way it works is you file with the United States, and I'm going to give you a broad, non-real number thing. But here's, for example, let's say you had to pay $100 in taxes in the United States, and Portugal looked at you and your earnings, and they decided you had to pay $120. You pay your $100 in the United States, and you pay the difference, the $20, to Portugal. So that's in really simplistic terms how that works. But yes, I can earn income here. My income comes from both places. I do have draw Social Security, and that gets directly deposited into a bank account from, you know, in the United States. And then I get money from international living, which gets directly deposited into a Portuguese bank account here. And we have accountants who speak English, who are very well versed in how all this works and have helped us. So it's very simple. The one thing I would say for your listeners who are thinking about this, if they are retired and they're going to be taking their pension and they just want to relax and tour about and receive their inevitable visitors who are going to want to see them now that they're moving to Portugal, that's great. If you're coming here to try to start a business or to get a job, it's not so great. And I say that with one exception. If you plan on starting your own business, especially online, for instance, we have friends here who are Canadian, Russian, Portuguese, Estonian, and they have businesses that where they sell. One has a jewelry business with Etsy online, and another does website design for people all over the world, but she's based here. Another is a photographer. She's independent. And another has a health practice where she teaches people about essential oils and does consultations on diet and nutrition. If you're an enterprising type person like that, and you want to basically create with you or bring with you whatever you've already created, you'll do great because it's easy. And you have the internet and you have a Facebook presence or a website presence. If you're coming to try to get hired by a Portuguese company, it's going to be a whole different situation. There's a hierarchical kind of system here. It's quite formal. And I think it would be very difficult to even find a job, to tell you the truth.
So what are the advantages of living in Portugal? I know you're very close to a lot of other countries. So is that the main attraction?
We take advantage of the fact that Portugal is close to so many other countries. And for instance, we have taken a number of long road trips where we drive through Spain to France to Germany and took a boat we took over from Germany to Denmark. And then we took a bridge across from Denmark to Sweden. There's a feeling, it's just like driving all around the United States, you know, from Ohio to Seattle or something. It's fabulous. We have that access here, and we definitely do make use of that. But Portugal itself is so rich. I had no clue before we moved here. I was never a history buff at all. I'm more into literature and the arts and history and actually, you know, science, math. That's even worse. But I came here and I became fascinated by history and architecture. The number of museums and the archaeological sites, the Roman ruins, the beautifully preserved mosaics. We looked in just recently, we were in Évora, which is in the Alentejo region, when we were house hunting. And there's a Roman temples there. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Where we live in Mafra, the National Palace is celebrating this year on the 17th of November. It will celebrate its 300th anniversary of the groundbreaking of November 1717. And inside this palace, which is one of the largest in Portugal, it's the size of 4 football fields. There's a basilica modeled after St. Peter's in Rome. It seems like unless you are in a tiny village or aldea where there's like only a coffee shop, but there's probably 3 anyway, they like their coffee here. There's so much to see, and the richness and the beauty of the land. Some places look just like Hawaii, with palm trees and valleys in green and running down to the ocean. We sat out last night in Iracema, which is a world-class surfing reserve, and had a drink to celebrate getting approved by the bank. And it was just magnificent to be sitting there on the Pacific Ocean, on the Atlantic Ocean, back to California again. So there's so much in this country and so much surrounding that I think it's an ideal location.
Do you feel safe living in Portugal?
On both counts, actually, I'm contributing to an article for International Living for next month on 3 walkable towns. And for me, I'm going to do the Portugal one. And the whole point is where you can be safe to walk around by yourself at night or whatever. And the answer is, we have found absolutely wherever we have been, we have felt totally safe. That's not to say you don't have to watch your purse if you get bumped around in a crowd in Lisbon somewhere, or in, you know, in a large city where they know there are lots of tourists. Yes, but in terms of personal, like, injury or harm to a body crime, Portugal moved up from number 3 to number 1 as the safest country in the world recently. So that's the answer to that question. We walk around at night at 1 o'clock in the morning someplace and never even blink. And it is nice to have that, the title of actually being officially the safest country. We've actually had a number of things, both my husband and I, just one time, for instance, he had a freak thing happen to him where he inhaled a cleaning substance and he aspirated and it went into his lungs and he couldn't breathe. It like shut his lungs down. And it was pretty panicky. He managed to get himself together enough for us to go to the, we were in a tiny, living in a tiny aldea, 35 minutes from Coimbra, which of course is a big city. It was a former capital of the country years ago. And we went into the town where the clinic was, and they said, you should go to the hospital. 30 minutes later, we were in the hospital. And within 10 minutes, he was seen. And within 30 minutes, he had had x-rays taken, 2 consultations with the doctor. He got the copy of the x-rays. He got them and the copy of the report, the analysis from the doctor in his hand to exit. And the whole thing cost €12, which is so $15 or so. So that was the public. We went to the, you know, the public health system. I've gone to the private hospital when I needed to. And the most I paid for, again, they took x-rays. They gave me an IV drip of a painkiller and different thing. I had taken a fall. And I think I paid €90 for that. But there is public healthcare, private healthcare, insurance available. For us, my husband and I have, we only carry catastrophic insurance. It's up to €5 million for some life-threatening illness or a catastrophe happens. And for us, it costs $90 a month per person, which is not a lot of money for when you consider it's up to €5 million of coverage. So care is quick. Sometimes you have to wait. I shouldn't say it's quick, but it's professional, competent, I think excellent. And you can go where you want and pay however much you want, get insurance or not. It's a wonderful, we've had nothing but good experiences here.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Tricia, and sharing your obvious love and passion for all things Portugal. You've become very adept at the language I can hear in your answers. All the best with the move to your new house, and hope you have plenty of time to enjoy your writing, and we look forward to reading about your adventures at International Living.
Well, I am delighted to do it, and I feel there's a really funny, my husband and I are always laughing, saying, don't tell everybody, because it's so idyllic right now. And I said, it's people should know, because this country has tried very hard to be up to date, modern. It's got beautiful autostradas with freeways that people in the United States would dream about. And when there's so much blessing and abundance here, I think people in other countries should know, if they're thinking about retiring and they want a place that's safe and affordable and pleasant with good weather, I think it's only fair to spread the good word.
You have been listening to Ann Nelson on the Retire Well, Retire Happy podcast. Today's guest has been Tricia Pimentel, the International Living Correspondent in Portugal. Obviously, the move to Portugal has paid dividends to Tricia, having completed her third book, A Movable Marriage, now out on Amazon.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.